My name is Joe Lombardo, and I am the coordinator of UNAC, United National Anti-War Coalition, which is the organization sponsoring this webinar. The title of this webinar is Abolish NATO Now. And the reason we're doing this webinar right now is because next week, NATO will be having its meeting, its international meeting, in The Hague in the Netherlands. And most of us will be there in person or in video to protest NATO, not to be part of NATO. UNAC is part of some organizations that are organizing against NATO there. We'll be holding alternative summits and meetings and protests against NATO. We're part of the Resist NATO Coalition. We're part of GWAN, which is the Global Women United for Peace Against NATO. And we're also part of the No to War, No to NATO network. And all of these groups will be holding events to oppose NATO. We modified the title of the webinar a little bit because no anti-war meeting today can happen without responding to the events that have taken place in the last couple of days, where Israel made an unprovoked attack on Iran. Israel, a nuclear power, threatens to spread the war, threatens the whole world with a nuclear configuration. And so we need to discuss that too. And of course, NATO is very much involved. It's very clear that the U.S. has been involved in the planning and has had knowledge of this. In fact, Trump has just said that directly. And the United Kingdom has sent fighter jets to the area. They haven't said what for, but I'm sure it is to support Israel, as they have been all along. And other NATO countries have been doing the same thing, expressing their support through Israel, through the genocide they've been conducting against the Palestinians in Gaza and in the West Bank, and now in their war against Iran. They attacked Iran with bombs. And when Iran gave a strong response, they said, how dare they? What are they supposed to do? So we're going to talk a little bit about that also today. Now, NATO is set up supposedly as a North Atlantic Treaty Organization, but it's anything but North Atlantic. It has been involved in aggressive pro-war invasions, bombings, occupations, not just in Europe. In fact, mostly not in Europe, but everywhere from Yugoslavia, as far away as Afghanistan, and many instances of NATO wars. It is an aggressive alliance, and it has expanded very much recently, especially since the fall of the Soviet Union, even though it promised not to, into countries that are surrounding Russia, creating more war. And the Ukraine war, in my opinion, and I'll speak more about this later, is a NATO proxy war. And we have to see it as that, and we have to understand it that way so we know how to oppose it. It is also very much involved in the whole Palestinian war with money, with political support, with intel, with logistics. And I think these wars have exposed NATO, have exposed Western aggression like never before. And so NATO is in trouble. The world knows what it is more today than it did even last year. And among its own members, there is controversy. And certainly within all the NATO countries, there is opposition to the increased spending for NATO and to NATO itself. So today we're going to talk about those things, and we are going to start out our discussion with Margaret Kimberly, who is the executive editor and senior columnist for the Black Agenda Report, something that all of you should pay attention to and be reading. She is on the coordinating committee of BAP, the Black Alliance for Peace, and she's also on the UNAC Administrative Committee. She's the author of Presidential, which is a book about Black America and the various presidents. their relationship to slavery, their relationship to white supremacy. It's an important book that people should read. So I'm going to turn it over to Margaret at this point.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Joe. And greetings. As Joe said, I'm Margaret Kimberly, and I'm speaking to you from New York City. And I am the executive editor of BlackAgendaReport.com, as well as a member of the leadership bodies of the United National Anti-War Coalition, UNAC, our host, and of the Black Alliance for Peace. As a NATO summit is set to take place in The Hague next week, I was very eager to participate in this UNAC webinar to say that for the sake of humanity, NATO must be abolished, which means imperialism must be abolished. In the last few days, it's as if time has stopped as we've watched first Israel attacking Iran and Iran's response. The purported reason for the military action was to stop Iran from developing a nuclear weapons capability. But that is a ruse meant to cover up for the fact that the destruction of the Iranian state has been part of U.S. foreign policy doctrine for many years. It is sad but true that the U.S. has succeeded in eliminating one state in that region after another, from Iraq to Libya to Syria, and given U.S. ally Israel greater power than ever. These are NATO issues, and they involve countries like the UK, which provide aid, intelligence support, and diplomatic cover, which prevents Israel from being treated as the war criminal nation that it is. Despite what I was told my whole life about the benevolent nature of NATO, the member nations of that organization have committed many crimes during my lifetime, ranging from the destruction of the state of Yugoslavia to the destruction of Libya and the destabilization of governments around the world. This structure is a means of giving the U.S. and its junior partners military and political power over the people of the world. In other words, NATO is an integral tool of imperialism. It's interesting that the North Atlantic Treaty Organization has made the South American nation of Colombia a, quote, global partner, unquote. NATO has also claimed Africa as part of its, quote, southern neighborhood, unquote. Of course, we can also ask why there is a U.S. military presence in South America or Africa at all. But there are more than 800 U.S. and NATO military bases around the world. The Black Alliance for Peace campaign, Zone of Peace in Our Americas, is organizing around the upcoming NATO summit with the call to action against NATO and its U.S. Southcom command on June 24th and 25th through teach-ins, political education, and actions to demand NATO out of our Americas. At zoneofpeace.org, there's more information on how to join the U.S. NATO Out of Our Americas network. When NATO was founded in 1949, much of the global South was still under colonial control. The US and European nations such as Britain, France, Portugal, the Netherlands, Italy, and Belgium, which colonized most of the world, were all founding members. In Africa, these nations colluded for years to prevent the continent from being liberated. In the early 1950s, they held conferences there inviting apartheid South Africa and what was then Rhodesia, along with the US. In 1967, the then recently ousted president of Ghana, Kwame Nkrumah, ousted in a Western coup, reported that there were at least 17 air bases, 9 foreign naval bases, 3 rocket sites, and an atomic testing range operated by NATO in North Africa, in addition to military missions in about a dozen other African countries, not to mention the exploitation of raw materials for the production of nuclear weapons occurring in the mines of Congo, Angola, South Africa, and what was Rhodesia. NATO should be a relic of the Cold War, which supposedly ended with the collapse of the Soviet Union in the early 1990s. We were told that the world needed NATO for protection against the USSR and its Warsaw Pact allies. By that logic, NATO should have ceased to exist, but instead it's only grown in size. Since 1999, former Warsaw Pact states such as Poland, Hungary, Bulgaria, Romania, and the Czech Republic joined NATO, as have former Soviet republics Estonia, Lithuania, and Latvia, along with the new states created from the destruction of Yugoslavia. Slovenia, North Macedonia, Montenegro, and Croatia, along with Albania, have all joined NATO. In addition, Sweden and Finland joined in recent years and gave up the neutrality that kept their countries safe and joined the dangerous and forever escalating proxy war in Ukraine. Colonial control is still the driver behind NATO's existence, and Global South nations are not the only ones being colonized. Trump is as strong a supporter of NATO as any other U.S. president. He differs only in publicly demanding that member nations spend more money on their militaries, and they do just that. In Canada, Mark Carney, the recently elected prime minister, announced that he would immediately meet the 2% of GDP threshold for military spending for NATO nations. Oddly enough, Carney claimed that a supposedly frayed relationship with the U.S. drove his decision-making. One would think that if Canada wanted to, as he put it, chart a new course, it would lower defense spending and disconnect itself from Washington's dictates. But instead, it ties itself to NATO even as it claims to be changing the relationship. Like Canada, Europeans live under ever-worsening austerity as a result of meeting U.S. military spending demands, with their once strong welfare state safety nets being weakened as a result of expenditures on war-making. Of course, military spending is more than half of all budget expenditures in the U.S., and people here suffer as their needs go unmet. We've recently seen escalations in Ukraine as Western nations openly said they would extend their attacks into Russia. The recent strikes against Russian military assets was highly provocative, but was supported by and cheered on by the U.S. and its partners. The Western strikes against Russia foretold what was to come in Iran. The U.S. pretended to be negotiating a new nuclear agreement in good faith, all the while giving Israel the go-ahead and pretending, as Secretary of State Marco Rubio said, that Israel took, as he put it, unilateral action and that the U.S. was not involved. Of course, Israel would not act without U.S. approval or help, and Trump, being Trump, couldn't keep up the pretense and openly bragged about knowing the date of the attack. As I said, he differs only in saying what other presidents would keep to themselves. NATO is an offensive force, one that continues feeding the military-industrial complex and depriving people of their rights to self-determination. The U.S. Africa Command, AFRICOM, and all of the U.S. military command structures are designed to do just that. There's been conjecture about whether Trump will keep AFRICOM as a standalone command or include it as part of the European command, which was the case before 2008. But the question is actually irrelevant. U.S. policy towards Africa will not change. The goal is to keep African nations weak with compromised leaders who will do the West's bidding. That is why the Alliance of Sahel States and the leadership of interim president Captain Ibrahim Traoré in Burkina Faso are viewed as such a threat. True independence for African and other peoples is not in the interests of the collective West. The same is true in Western Asia, where the goal of U.S. primacy remains unchanged. That is why the destruction of the Syrian state was such a great tragedy, a classic CIA operation which destroyed it from within and weakened it enough to put the Western jihadist proxies in power and include Syria as part of the Greater Israel Project, increasing the likelihood of a successful attack on the Iranian state. All eyes must be on Iran, as I believe the events of this week are only the beginning of the years-long U.S.-NATO plotting against that country. So we must say no to NATO and no to imperialism, which wreak havoc from Northern Europe to Southern Africa. The existence of humanity and the planet depend upon our opposition to this dangerous structure.
Thank you, Margaret. That was great. I was happy that you brought in the Global South and Africa, especially where some strong leaders in Africa are starting to take things into their own hands and getting rid of the colonial powers, and also the mention of Syria, which is very important. And some people in our movement, I think, don't quite get Syria. But I also think you're right that Iran is going to be with us for a while, and it's a place we're going to have to, as a peace movement, struggle around to try to stop the aggression against Iran. Our next speaker is Pippa Bartolotti. And Pippa is someone who has traveled a lot, to many places of the world. She's lived in Cuba. She drove a caravan that started in Wales, where she lived at the time, through Europe on its way to Gaza before the recent attacks on Gaza, and was able to successfully get an aid caravan, an overland caravan, into Gaza and help with what aid they were able to bring. At another point, she was arrested when, with an international delegation, she went to try to get into Israel, to get to Bethlehem to support a Palestinian arts project, and she spent time in an Israeli prison for trying to help the Palestinian people. She is the former leader of the Wales Green Party. She is a leader of GWAM, the Global Women United for Peace Against NATO, and she is a member of UNAC. So I'll turn it over to Pippa.
Thank you, Joe. That was quite an introduction. Well, those old colonial powers didn't go away, did they? Those old imperialists, those bigots and racists, they never went away. They just formed a club and called it NATO. They said it was a defense organization and just carried on with death and pillage as before. Israel is a major non-NATO ally and a member of the NATO-Mediterranean dialogue. Israel uses weapons from NATO countries who are delighted to sell them to their fellow colonialists. But Israel takes this thing a lot further. It's common knowledge that Israel battle tests weapons on the people of Palestine. You go to armed fairs and the Israeli stands will have battle tested all over it. We know what happens. Doctors in Gaza have long said they are finding munitions embedded in bodies which they have never seen before. Bullets such as the butterfly bullet, which explodes upon impact, pulverizing tissue, arteries, and bone, and causing severe internal injuries. Now, back in 1899 at the Hague Convention, and by the way, women weren't allowed to go to that because back in 1899, you know, we weren't anything. We were just chapels. And a lot of us have said about changing that for sure. But back in 1899, even then, explosive rounds of ammunition were banned internationally. But it seems to be okay for Israel to use them because its NATO allies close ranks around it and protect its every vile and disgusting creation. Now, the bombing of Iran is a direct result of letting Israel act with impunity in Gaza. We've all seen the news media and thrown bricks at our televisions. We all know what the reporting is like, the bias in Western media, the fact that Palestinians die, but Israelis are killed. The fact that Israel has a government, but Iran has a regime. The subtle propaganda that the media indulges governments in is hard to see past, but thank goodness we have a lot of alternative media. So Israel is now bombing currently five countries simultaneously, all under the watchful eye of NATO, which helps, as Margaret was saying, which helps track people, which helps track the planes and the activities in these other countries. NATO calmly pretends it's got nothing to do with it, but, you know, the NATO countries are frantically rearming this pariah state with weapons almost as fast as they can make them. It's also notable that calls for de-escalation are coming from NATO countries. Have you noticed that? De-escalation and restraint are code words for leave our little delinquent baby Israel alone. It's not restraint about anybody else. Just stop hurting Israel. They've got glass heads. If you look, you can see right through them. Unlike Iran, Israel has nuclear weapons, about 900, some say. And if you can remember back, I can't remember when Mordechai Vanunu blew the whistle on Israeli nuclear weapons. He has been in jail for 20 odd years and is in house arrest in Israel. He'll never be able to leave. He paid a huge price for doing that. Unlike Iran, Israel refuses to sign the non-proliferation treaty. Unlike Iran, Israel is bombing almost all its neighbors, but that's okay. Unlike the people Israel bombs, Israel has the sole right to protect itself because NATO countries say so. According to the analyzed data from the Armed Conflict Location and Event Data Project, since October the 7th, Israel has conducted more than 17,000 attacks on these five countries. And I'll just say who they are: Lebanon, Syria, Yemen, Iran, and obviously the Palestinian territories. But apparently this is okay because NATO countries back them up. The setup of the UN Security Council with the five veto powers in place was deliberately formed this way to allow for atrocities anywhere in the world. And none have taken more advantage of this than NATO. Israel, it seems, has a right to defend itself from peace, especially when it comes to weapon sales. Israel, it seems, has a right to break every law in the international rule book. Israel, it seems, has a right to inflict systematic, cruel, and inhumane annihilation of a whole people. And NATO countries think this is fine. Now, many of those across the world asking for world peace are in fact satisfied with a lull between wars. I'm not one of those people. World peace is an undertaking that will take generations. Teaching conflict resolution in schools and families, moving economies from militarization to community enhancement, enabling a real peace dividend should mean lifting the living and thinking standards of all aspects of the country, from housing and education to technology and design. If NATO was really a defense organization, it would be doing all of the above, all of those things. It would have been doing them all since its inception in 1949. Alas, history tells us that none of these things have happened. And if it's left to NATO, these things will never happen. The principal beneficiary of NATO's increasing financial targets is the arms industry, the military-industrial complex, which has seen revenue, profits, and share prices surge. These increased targets of up to 5% of GDP, that's what Trump is asking, with all the attendant environmental consequences, are igniting a new arms race just as the climate crisis worsens. This will lead to increased emissions and absorb financial resources from already grossly inadequate climate finance. NATO's requirements are a political distraction that diverts funds away from the biggest security crisis humanity has ever faced, and that's climate breakdown. NATO has aided and abetted, overseen and armed all the major conflicts of the world since it was formed, resulting in the death of millions. It gives its interventions fancy names. It propagandizes the population into submission. And no one ever takes NATO to the courts for their contribution to war and destruction. The environmental damage caused by NATO is incalculable. And with every new war, every new bomb, our pollution increases and global temperatures rise. NATO is a criminal organization and must, in the name of the survival of every living thing on this planet, be dissolved. Thank you.
Thank you, Pippa. The final presentation is going to be by Cody Urban. Cody is a leader of Resist US-led War Movement and also a leader of the Resist NATO Coalition, which is playing such an important role, which we're all part of, UNAC is part of, and is playing such an important role in building opposition to this NATO conference that will take place in The Hague, and did its first actions, I think it was its first actions, which I was also part of, last July when NATO came to Washington, D.C., where we held a wonderful, youthful march and rally and counter summit to NATO with a lot of the people that have been joining the peace movement around the Palestinian struggle in the United States, which has revitalized our movement in a great way.
Hi, everyone. Thank you so much, Joe. And thank you to UNAC for putting on this really, really much needed webinar at this time, you know, not just with leading up to the NATO summit coming up in just a few days, but with the absolute horrors that we've seen, continued to see happening in Palestine. But of course, like everyone else has said, the few days with this outright war of aggression, because that's what happened, this outright war of aggression that was provoked by the U.S. and Israel against Iran. As Joe said, I'm with the Resist US-led War Movement, which I'll send some more information in the chat about in a little bit. We're a global anti-war, anti-imperialist, and pro-peace network of organizations around the world. And as Joe said, we're part of the Resist NATO Coalition. It's very difficult, I think, to follow Margaret and Pippa, who I think are two of the greatest voices in the anti-war movement today. But I was asked to give sort of a brief history of NATO to kind of talk about how we can understand NATO truly as an imperialist war machine today. Almost everything I'm about to say, you can actually read about in our primer, our educational primer from Resist US-led War Movement called NATO Imperialist War Machine. We even have a second edition that goes through a timeline of events of the war in Ukraine, which we definitely agree with Joe at the beginning of this webinar, is a NATO proxy war. But NATO, as Pippa described it, as this club of the world's most dangerous imperialist powers, actually started with a slogan, the slogan of the Club of NATO. And this comes from NATO's first ever Secretary General, is keep America up, Germany down, and Russia out. That was from day one of NATO. So this whole thing, what we're saying, that NATO is just a defensive alliance that's trying to defend against Russian aggression on Europe. Day one, NATO was born to be anti-Russia. And because of its members having colonies all over the world, it was born to be imperialist. Something that a lot of people don't know about NATO, I remember there's at the NATO summit last year, Biden said, this is the tightest united alliance that exists in the world today. But a lot of people don't know that NATO almost practically went to war with itself in multiple times of its history. So what a lot of people don't know is that two NATO members practically went to war with each other over Cyprus, and that was Greece and Turkey. Now, I was recently in Cyprus during the 50th anniversary of the Turkish invasion and continued settler occupation of the northern half of Cyprus. And when I was there, I actually learned a lot about this so-called conflict, this conflict between Turkey and Greece. Turkey and Greece are both NATO members, and they have been for years. And in 1974, the Greek fascist regime, which was totally backed by the U.S. and was a fascist, openly fascist neo-Nazi regime within the NATO alliance, first invaded Cyprus to try to annex it into its country. Then Turkey, saying that it was going to defend Turkish-speaking Cypriots, invaded from the north, and then actually has held a settler occupation of the country for 50 years up until now. Now, Turkey said that it was doing this, that it was going to defend Turkish-speaking Cypriots from the Greek military. The Greek military said it was going to defend Greek-speaking Cypriots from the Turkish military. And yet I learned when I was there, when I heard testimony and saw footage of this invasion, there were hardly any shots actually fired between Greece and Turkey at each other. They were mostly done on civilians on the areas they wanted to occupy. And what I also learned was that during a NATO summit that happened just a few years earlier, there were secret meetings that happened that people to this day, it can't be confirmed what happened in those secret meetings. But Greece and Turkey were part of these meetings at different times. And it's very much suspected that the U.S. used the NATO alliance to broker a deal to allow two of its members to invade another country, another sovereign country, displace thousands of its people, and to try to make a deal so they wouldn't go to full war with each other. That's the so-called unbreakable united NATO alliance that Biden was talking about. I was about to say Trump, but we hear all this stuff that Trump is saying about NATO. But actually, another thing we should not forget is that Trump wants NATO to exist just like everyone else. The difference is that he's trying to do the art of the deal and trying to bluff NATO members into paying more money to keep it together. He's succeeding. The only people that are benefiting from this are the military-industrial complex from all this military spending going up. If we fast forward from this joint agreement over the displacement and occupation of Cyprus that NATO helped broker between two of its members, I think Margaret talked about the invasion and the bombing of Yugoslavia and the complete tearing apart of that country. You know, I'm remembering, well, I was very young when this happened. I was only a few years old during the U.S. and NATO counterinsurgency intervention in the wars that were happening in the former Yugoslavia. But I hear all about how the U.S. and NATO talk about the violence that happened at Srebrenica. That was a genocide, and we can't question that. But what's happening in Palestine, that's just Israel trying to defend itself. The reason why the first is a genocide to NATO is because that was justification to send in bombs and increase U.S. influence. The reason why the second is just another country having the right to defend itself is because this is the U.S. trying to shield a genocide from our eyes to keep on to the influence that it used NATO to expand around the world. NATO has been genocidal since its very start. And like Margaret mentioned, the leads of NATO were all colonial powers. They have all enacted their own genocides at different parts in history, long before the Holocaust happened under the leadership of the Nazis. Now, coming up at the end of my time, I think Joe is right. We have to situate this in what's happening with Iran right now. And to know about, understand NATO's history, why NATO was acting this way and shielding Israel from its genocide against Palestine and its war of aggression against Iran, we have to hear about this other group within NATO called the Mediterranean Security Dialogue. Now, this was a group of countries that throughout West Asia and North Africa, they were given special member status by the U.S., by NATO, so that NATO members could be pulled into the U.S.'s wars throughout the region. This is how NATO members were pulled into the US's invasion of Iraq. This is how NATO members were pulled into the dismemberment of Libya. It's how NATO members were pulled into the operations around Somalia that displaced and killed so many Somali fisher folk while the US was trying to expand its influence there. I was recently in Kenya, and in Kenya I learned, which is another special NATO member country, that the US and NATO members are kidnapping people in Yemen and taking them to military prisons in Kenya in order to torture and interrogate them. That's how these different special member status countries are used with NATO. And this is how NATO is sending in its members to shield the actions of its satellite states like Israel. It was U.S. and British warplanes that, and French, and I think also French, that were shooting down Iran's missiles that were justifiably going towards Israel after Israel provoked this war. Germany, France, U.K., they were all told by Israel what was going to happen with Iran, and they did absolutely nothing. So if the NATO states are going to do nothing, it's because they support all of these actions 100%. So the people of the world have to fight back against all of this. And finally, it takes a movement that like all of us are a part of. And if you want to join the Resist US-led War movement, I'll also put this in the chat here. We have to keep fighting. We cannot stop. And I'm so glad to be joined by all of these great speakers and many of you here in our fight against US-led war. Resist and abolish NATO, hands off Iran, free Palestine, and fight for just and lasting peace.
Thank you, Cody. Cody mentioned, and others have mentioned, Ukraine. And I just want to make a couple of quick comments about Ukraine, because I think there are two things happening in the world, which NATO is involved in both of them, and U.S. imperialism is behind both of them. One is the Israeli genocide against the Palestinians. I think one of the things that that has done is it has opened people's eyes. There is a question in the question and answer about how we build a mass movement, and I do want to take that question up or let the panelists take that up in a minute. But that's started to do that. We started to see that, the students coming out, the campuses, the rallies. First time in many, many years we've seen mass rallies in the United States. And the reason it did it because it burst the bubble that the U.S. and the European countries are these great democracies that support freedom and don't do the kinds of things that we are seeing, the violations of international law, the war crimes, the genocide that we are seeing in Palestine. That opened people's eyes, raised their consciousness. That's the prerequisite to building any mass movement, and we saw that. But the other is Ukraine. There's a couple of things about Ukraine. The idea that the Western imperialist powers, especially the United States, was so much superior to the rest of the world militarily that it could do what it wants. When in 2022, the U.S. said that we were going to impose sanctions on, although there were massive sanctions prior to this, on Russia, and that will destroy Russia because it is nothing more than a gas station posing as a country. We saw how incorrect that was. And as a matter of fact, in terms of the industrial power to produce military products, Russia has outproduced the United States and all of Europe. These are countries that at one point became powerful and wealthy through their industrial powers, but have deindustrialized. It was they moved towards a financial type of capitalism and moved their industries overseas and no longer were able to produce this. So the idea of the invulnerability of the United States and Western Europe and NATO was destroyed by what's happening in Ukraine, where we see Russia winning this war. If you follow the mapping projects, as I do, the pro-Ukrainian, the neutral, and the pro-Russian mapping projects, they're pretty much in line all the time now. Two or three villages per day have been taken by Russia in Ukraine as we see the real collapse of the Ukrainian army. You won't hear that here. You won't hear that in the United States. There's a lot of propaganda in the United States. We banned the voices from countries we don't like in the United States. The great democracy of the United States and Western Europe do not allow anymore Russia Today. Do not allow Sputnik. Do not allow Press TV. Do not allow the main voices from the countries that the U.S. tries to portray as our enemies, as we portray all the people in these countries as some kind of new Hitler without allowing their voices and with tremendous propaganda. The war in Ukraine did not start in 2022. It really started a long time ago, It started when the United States promised the Soviet Union that it would not expand NATO east of Germany. It's now in 16 of those countries. It's on the border with Russia. It holds military maneuvers in these countries, right on the border with Russia. It has brought nuclear weapons to these countries. And if Ukraine became a NATO power and was able to put nuclear weapons on the border with Russia, those nuclear weapons would be minutes from Moscow. Moscow would have to be on a trigger to, when it saw a missile launch from one of these places, to respond, and the whole world would be placed in incredible danger. After the coup that took place in 2014, we saw the Russian language being banned in Ukraine. We saw the major parties, the Party of Regions, which was the biggest party, the party that was in power, one that was supported by most of the Russian-speaking people. Russia is the main language in Ukraine. It is not Ukrainian. It is Russian. But it was banned. The second biggest party in the country was the Communist Party. That, too, was banned. In fact, all opposition parties have been banned in Ukraine. This is another great democracy that we talk about now. And then people rose up in Ukraine. They rose up in Kharkiv, they rose up in Odessa, they rose up in Mariupol. And there were massacres in these three places as right-wing Nazi forces. I've seen these Nazi forces. I've been to Ukraine. I've been to Odessa to join in the protests at the massacre, against the massacre that took place in Odessa at the House of Trade Unionists. I've seen the people with the swastikas on their coats, with the swastika tattoos, with the swastikas they wrote on the sidewalks. I've seen what they do. I've seen what they say. I've heard it, and so have other people. You just don't hear it in the United States. Anyway, other places that rose up was Crimea and voted overwhelmingly to leave Ukraine after this coup and go back to Russia, which it had been part of Russia for centuries. Other areas pulled away from Ukraine and formed the People's Republic of Luhansk and the People's Republic of Donetsk, put together militias to fight for their own sovereignty. And the Ukrainian army was very weak, couldn't oppose these places. Many in the Ukrainian army actually deserted and joined them at this point. But the U.S. stepped in and built the Ukrainian army at that point from one of the smallest in Europe to one of the biggest in the world. It armed them, it trained them, and it used them to try to take back Donbas. And it was at this time that Russia saw the incredible danger right on their border. And that's when they started the special military operation that has been going on. And that war has been without NATO. This is a proxy war. That war would have been ended immediately. But Russia didn't want the war. Almost immediately after it started, it backed its troops out and called for negotiations. There were negotiations that took place in Turkey. They were actually initialed. They would have saved the areas that were still part of Ukraine as Ukraine. But the U.S. and Britain twisted the arm of the Ukrainian leadership and they backed out of it. It wasn't the first time they did this. When the fighting was going on in the Donbas after the 2014 coup, there was another talks that took place. These were the Minsk Accords, and they tried to bring a peace, the kind of peace that Pippa talked about, that was an end to the fighting, but kept the powers in place that would always want the war because they wanted to see the destruction of Russia. And so what we learned from the leaders from the West that were part of that at that time, Hollande from France and Merkel from Germany, that although they signed the agreement, they never intended for the agreement to bring about peace. They just were using it for a period to build up the military so they could attack with more force the Donbas and eventually Russia. There are people in this country who would like to see an end to Russia because they know that the major power that is opposing their economic strength and their power around the world today is China. And if they could end one of its allies, which is Russia, then further surround China, they can be in a better place to oppose China. The U.S. and the imperialist powers will bring us war after war after war until we stop them. Francis Lawrence sent something into the UNAC discussion group today, and it was a picture of a group of people holding up a UNAC banner yesterday in the No Kings rally that took place in Chicago, where thousands and thousands of people came out. It was a UNAC banner that says, no NATO, no war. And he asked the important question, how do we build a mass anti-war movement in the U.S. today? This is the only way we are going to bring about an end to imperialism around the world, is by people power, people organizing. So I'm going to throw that question. I have some thoughts on it too, which I might mention, but I'm going to throw that question open to the other panelists and see if they have any thoughts on that first, because I think that is an extremely important question that our movement has to deal with. How do we build the kind of mass movement we've started to see in other countries, we've started to see in its infancy in the United States around the Palestinian struggle, and we have seen at other times, especially around the Vietnam War in the United States, which brought millions of people time and time again out in the streets and made a difference?
Okay, it's a huge, huge question, and none of us are going to cover it completely, but you know, one of the first things we've got to do is find each other. And this is what these webinars are all about. They're about finding each other, reinforcing knowledge, teaching, understanding the problems, understanding the inequalities, the social problems in our countries, and find common ground with each other. And we have to keep on meeting like this, and we have to keep on talking to each other, because so many people really do feel like us, but they are not part of us. They don't know how to join. They don't know their place in all this. And so they quietly disagree with what's going on. And that's why I say we have to find each other. I think the work that Resist NATO is doing is fantastic. The outreach is amazing. Global Women are the same. You know, we've got hundreds of members all around the world now. And it's important for women to step up to the bar here, because like I said earlier, we weren't even invited to the earlier talks in The Hague because we were chattels. Well, we're not chattels anymore. And we better get used to it, because we have to find each other and talk to each other. So it is by understanding the problems people have and their resistance to joining groups like ours, all ours, whether it's UNAC, Resist NATO, Guan. There are many, many peace and justice groups out there. But it's not just about anti-war. It is about education towards what a just peace might actually mean in the world, and giving people a handle to get onto. This is what we're aiming for. Because it is one thing to be against something, but you have to know what you're for. And I think it's really important that we start painting a picture of the future, which is for a better life, which is for anti-militarization, for example, of schools. We need to help people understand. We need to grasp their problems. We need to unite more, be out there more, and help each other to become emboldened to speak, think, and act according to their own moral compass and not somebody else's.
Anybody else? And I know Margaret might have to leave soon because of another meeting, so maybe she would like to speak next.
Yes, thank you. I agree with everything that Pippa pointed out. I would add a couple of things. You know, in the United States, I guess throughout the collective West, bourgeois democracy is a big problem. People are told that the only thing you can do is vote, and vote for the two bourgeois parties, and they switch places. So one becomes less popular, people vote the other one in, which of course fails to meet their needs. Then it becomes less popular, put the other one back. And we have this revolving door of the two capitalist imperialist parties. And we see a problem now with someone like Trump. There were big protests yesterday. Trump had this silly, it was actually embarrassing, military parade in Washington on Flag Day, and was very poorly attended. But people turned out. What was it called? No Kings, the No Kings events. But it was anti-Trump. It was not anti-military spending, which is most of the U.S. budget. And I think we have to find a way to convey to people what it means for everyone's life. Anything for the people, we're told no. Can we have national health care? Nope. Can we have student loan debt relief? Nope. Some of the programs during the COVID pandemic, they just ended. And they cut Medicaid and they cut the food benefit program. So people can't act like it's just Trump and the Republicans. But we have to fight liberalism. We have to fight the duopoly parties. So I would say that folks have to join an organization. There has to be an organization aligned with your views. You have to be in coalition with other people. And then we can struggle to move people along, away from thinking that the system is good. There's just a good or bad person to be in the White House, and to help people see that we need major structural change in the country. So it is a big question. Pippa is absolutely right. So I think I touched on just a bit of it.
Rudy, do you have any thoughts?
Sure. Well, even more than just a big question, I think this is actually the biggest question we should be asking ourselves when we do these talks. I think, in addition to agreeing totally with what Pippa and Margaret were saying, two important things come to mind. One, we have to find out all of the different ways that war and imperialism affect people and see those people as our allies, as like the main force of the movement. One of the biggest forces in the anti-war movement is actually the workers' movement that are blocking these weapon shipments at the ports that are going to other countries, because they know that the companies that are shipping them are the same companies that are cutting their paychecks and ending their benefits and their safety conditions. You know, it's actually part of their struggle for their very livelihood. You know, that's a force in the anti-war movement we should work with. National liberation movements that are trying to end imperialist control over their countries. You know, another of the many countries that are non-NATO partners. Japan was actually named one, for example, 2 years ago at the G7 summit in Hiroshima. And since then, Japan has moved its military alongside the U.S. in all these major exercises in building, having a presence in the Philippines, in the Korean Peninsula, in the Indian Ocean. You know, all these nations here are fighting, are active fights for their national liberation against imperialist puppet rulers. Those movements should be part of our anti-war movement, and we shouldn't see ourselves, just like the workers' movement, as separate from them. Countries that are asserting their independence. I mean, I think, you know, Iran right now, I bet that there's different opinions about what we think Iran's government is right now, maybe throughout this webinar. But I think the one thing we all agree on is we all disagree with the way the U.S. imperialism is governing itself. And I actually think Iran is our ally in the anti-war movement right now. It's fighting back against the most powerful imperialists out there. Iran is part of our anti-imperialist, anti-war united front. So I think that's how we have to view this. All of these workers' movements, national liberation movements, independent governments asserting their sovereignty, this is all part of our anti-war movement, and we need to stand with them. And second of all, we need to build broad alliances to bring in as many people as we can. I agree with Margaret. We need to have a strong line, and we need to hold on to it and not compromise principle. But we need to bring in as many people as possible. That's why, again, Resist US-Led War Movement is a broad network of many different organizations. The Resist NATO campaign we formed as a broad coalition like that. And I'm also proud to say that we're a very new partner of the US NATO Out of Our Americas network that Margaret mentioned and is helping lead. So all of these networks we have to build broadly and really fight hard to win.
Can I chip in with a couple of success stories, actually?
Okay.
The first was the South Sea Island, or the Pacific Islanders, I think they called themselves, when they became independent from New Zealand. They had amazing success. I mean, from 1946 to 1996, 300 nuclear tests were done on these islands. And they got together and they forced this incredible annihilation of nature and air and water to stop. The second one is Greenham Common. I don't know if you're all familiar with the Greenham Common ladies who actually camped out at Greenham Common in the south of England at the US air base to stop nuclear warheads being stored in Britain. Now, they camped out for 19 years and they won. And those women are absolutely, they had babies, their babies grew up and went to school. I mean, and they stayed and they stayed and they won. And it's the most amazing success story, certainly in Britain. And now we're starting again in Laken Heath, where once again in the east of England, the US is trying to put nuclear weapons on British soil. And we were up at Laken Heath just a couple of months ago working against that. So there are success stories, and I think we ought to make more of them. And we ought to learn from them, because tactics are really important. And back in the day, they didn't have the internet and the great communications that we have. So had they, it would have been a lot quicker, I'm sure.
One of the things about back in the day was we didn't have the internet. I lived back in the day. I'm old enough to have been back in the day. We get our mimeograph machines going and we put out our leaflets, and then we'd have to be out in the streets and be door to door to talk to people, which is still the best way of organizing, I've found, that we have to talk to people. One of the things about the United States, which makes a problem, in my opinion, for building a mass movement, is that there's a lot of sectarianism. The United States, the biggest capitalist entity, the biggest capitalist imperialist country, has imbued that ideology into people. People think, well, their idea is better than this person's idea. They're the one that can do it. It never has been. History has only been made by people collectively doing things. And there has been sectarianism in the anti-war movement. One group doesn't want to work with the next, or even if they have the same politics, what they want to do is they want to be the one that puts it forward because they want to build their own organization. And they see that as the important way to move forward. That sectarianism, I think, has hurt our movement. As I said, I was involved from a long time ago. I was very much involved in the anti-war movement against the Vietnam War many, many years ago. I remember when we were building that movement, I was looking back at what people did in the 30s in the labor movement and how they got together, thinking how long that was. Well, you know, now I'm talking about the 60s. That was 30 or 40 years ago. It's been much longer from Vietnam to now. But at that time, we were able to build a movement in a very, very different way. And we did build mass movements, and we did have massive demonstrations. Demonstrations weren't the be-all and end-all, but they were part of building a movement, and it became a youth movement. It became a movement where we said we didn't trust anybody over 30, which I didn't until I became 30. And it got so deep into the consciousness of people that we dressed differently. It was part of the music. It was part of everything. It was a whole cultural experience of question authority. And that got so deep that it reached into the military. And it reached into the military in the sense of people on their helmets having peace signs on their helmets or Black Power salutes, of questioning the authority of their so-called superiors, of their officers. They would say, let's take that hill. They would say, you take that hill. There was fragging instances that took place. The U.S. military in Vietnam ceased to be a fighting force, and they lost. They had to leave Vietnam. And many other movements at the same time developed because there was the same kind of consciousness, whether it was civil rights movement, the Black Power movement around, you know, started with people like Malcolm X, by any means necessary, the slogan that we need today, the women's movement, the gay rights movement, many, many other movements took place. It took them a while to push back on those movements, but they did. And it took them a long time before they were able to go to war again, like they were able to do after 9/11 against Iraq, and they have continued. But we still have the potential of building that kind of movement, and we are starting to move in that direction. It really does require people to do things. Now, we saw, I mentioned the No to NATO, No to War banner that people carried in the Chicago demonstration and said they didn't get a lot of response, because those demonstrations have been pro-NATO demonstrations. They've been anti-Trump, and they think Trump maybe in some way has been against NATO. He never has, as Cody explained. He's gotten NATO countries to up the amount they give to NATO to take over the bulk of the fight against Russia so he can focus his fight in other places. And that's a problem. That's the problem that Margaret mentioned, that if you don't like what you see now, you go to the other political party. That's a movement that will try to take our movement and try to move it in that direction. The people that come out, they come out because they hate what they see happening. They hate the attacks against immigrants. They hate the attacks against the Palestinians and Palestinian rights activists that are being jailed. They hate the attacks on their own living standard. And the one difference we will see as this movement develops now, which we didn't see during the Vietnam War, was the labor did not come out during the Vietnam War. I mean, everybody who came out was part of labor, or most of them. But labor as labor and the unions, by and large, did not come out. But today, as we move forward and as the U.S. economy's economic superiority is being challenged by BRICS and other countries, the only thing they can do to keep up their profits and the rate of profit increasing is to attack the American working class. And more we will start to see, I believe, these new anti-war movements and these new movements for Palestine, new movements for immigrant rights, new movements that we're beginning to see tying in with the movements that we're developing in other countries around the world, and we will see a labor component as we haven't before. And I think it portends something very good for the future, but it only will happen if we all get involved.
Thank you, Joe. I put in the chat, and I just want to emphasize, there was a coordinated counter-revolution at the end of the 60s into the early 70s. So it's partly not a mystery that there has been less activism for the past 50 years. This rightward shift with first Ronald Reagan's presidency, it's like every other president is some kind of version of Reagan, whether they're Republicans or Democrat. But this was something that was planned. People should look up the Powell memo. Powell became a Supreme Court justice, but it was a letter to the Chamber of Commerce and others saying, we can stop this movement and this is how we must do it. I'm paraphrasing badly, but I hope that folks look for it. That is an explanation. We had COINTELPRO, we had the prison industrial complex, all sorts of things that were planned to kill left-wing movements off. So I think it's important for us to know that even as we struggle to fight against liberalism, and the No Kings rally is just liberalism, that it's, you know, hands off NATO. I mean, how are you, whatever, let me not digress, but that is what that is what we must fight against, but we can do it. And this, even, you know, liberals will attack Trump from the right. So this whole trope about him being pro-Russia and he doesn't like NATO, of course he loves NATO. We shouldn't, but I always tell people, you shouldn't like NATO. You can't get your needs met because of NATO. People are killed all over the world because of NATO. So Trump is just fine with NATO, but you should not be. And it's the sort of thing people are not used to hearing.
So I just want to say, everybody out there, stay strong. You've got to stay strong. You've got to hold the line. And we've got to get together much more often to reinforce our ideas and our joy at being the one tribe that cares about humanity and the future of the planet.